Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 129. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films. Matt Scalisi, editor of filmnerds.com.
Fair warning, I may have to take a pause in the middle of this to give my cat some Pedialyte.
So. Please leave this in the podcast.
I may just leave it recording while I do that.
Yeah.
She'll just, like, you know, claw at me and you can hear me scream. All right, ready to go?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1. Matt, how are you doing today?
Pretty good.
Great. So we first, we both saw Ghostbusters this weekend, the remake of the 1986 movie, 1984 movie. I'm off to a bad start here. anyway, we saw Ghostbusters, and we're going to talk about it, and we're going to spoil it. So before we spoil it, let's just kind of give like a quick thumbs up, thumbs down. Did you like it?
Yeah, definite thumbs up.
Yeah, same here. Okay, good. All right. I got a cryptic text from you after you saw it, and I don't know, there was a vagueness to it that made me worry that maybe you didn't like this movie. So I'm glad to hear that you liked it.
Well, here's the thing. It's very, and I'm sure we're going to get into this, but like, it's really, my first thought walking out was, it's such a shame that this movie cannot exist and nothing about it really can be discussed in the vacuum of itself as a movie.
Yep.
And that's not entirely just the fault of the rest of the world. The movie engaged in it, and thus it makes it necessary to discuss part of that. And, it, you know, it kind of, I don't want to say it ruined the experience for me, but I would definitely have much less complicated feelings about this movie if it was not the center of essentially a political debate, and even more so if it had not sort of deliberately injected itself into that debate too.
I didn't feel much of that political debate happening in the movie itself.
Very little, to be fair, very little of it. I think maybe more so on the marketing side of it and the promotional side of it. But
well, look, I'm not going to hold any marketing against any movie in most cases.
Yeah,
because marketing is almost uniformly horrible
right.
in this day and age. Well, I think, you mentioned it not existing in a vacuum, and I think that's true just because it's a remake, and it does, especially there's a moment in there where they are looking for a logo, and a graffiti artist draws the logo for the old movie. And that entire moment, it just feels like a total, you know, nod to an existing thing. But I catch myself, like, holding that against the movie, but then I think about the Millennium Falcon moment in The Force Awakens, you know, or the hologram chess clay fighter scene in that movie. And I'm like, well, those are basically just there to let everybody remember how great the original movies are. So it's hard to hold it against this movie and not hold it against that movie.
Well, here's the difference, okay? Like, I think that because Star Wars came up a lot in my immediate discussion after this, too, for a number of reasons. But what you're talking about right there, that is all in canon. Like, that the movie you're talking about is a sequel that fully builds upon and acknowledges the movies that came before it. And this movie is not that. This is kind of halfway between a, you know, reverent reboot of a popular property and a bit of a parody of it, too, and kind of a winky subversion of it, or at least sort of it seems like it's being that way. It actually reminded me a little bit of how Lord and Miller treated 21 Jump Street, you know, that there's like kind of an acknowledgement that a lot of the things in that original movie don't make any sense, and, you know, let's sort of like make a little bit of fun of it. But
see, I didn't get that at all. Like, what are some specific examples of that?
So yeah,
let me finish that thought real quick.
Yeah.
But because even that moment I'm talking about that is entirely self-referential. I feel like it is still very reverential of that logo, of that original movie. I never felt like this movie was talking down to the 84 movie.
I don't think it's talking down to it. I think that there are parts of it, maybe the way that they would explain it is, those things in the 84 movie wouldn't make any sense if we made a 2016 movie where that happened, so we have to change things. You know, I think kind of the entire relationship with the mayor and his assistant is very much, I feel like, an attempt to say, well, we have to make this work in 2016 logic. And I think another big part of it, too, is a much lesser reference. But when they go and visit the fire station and they're like, yeah, this is $200,000 a month or whatever. And you have to live in the attic of a Chinese restaurant instead. Like, they were little things, but I think.
Yeah, but I think that's almost more about New York than it is, than it is just pure. I mean, obviously, it's the location from the original movie, but. You know, I don't know. That joke worked for me just because of. Yeah. Again,
here's the thing.
Like,
I don't think that this movie. Here's what I would say overall with that stuff. I think this movie doesn't necessarily benefit from its connection to Ghostbusters. Like, the screenplay doesn't. I think that when you talk about Star Wars and maybe some of these other recent reboots of old properties, they benefit from their connection to the old franchise. I think this movie, and it's so hard to say it this way because it's such a ridiculous, like, hypothetical for me to say this, but, like, if everything else about this movie was the same, except it wasn't connected to a 1984 popular franchise, it would be a much less... people would have much less conflicted feelings about this movie, and I think it would have been easier to enjoy it. And I think the movie would have been less restrained by, like, to me, every time it tries to connect something to the original Ghostbusters movie, it slows the movie down. It feels like it is a burden on the movie rather than a thing that creates great moments and highlights in the movie. To me, all the best stuff in the movie has basically nothing to do with Ghostbusters from the original movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to argue that in terms of that there are moments in this movie that would not exist if it wasn't a remake of the original movie.
Yeah, I know.
That's
the problem.
but at the same time, like, and I wish it wasn't. I wish that wasn't the case. This is essentially a movie about four female friends exploring the scientific method, and the way they do that is to prove that ghosts are real. And, and contain them, kind of. And that's just a really fun idea for a horror comedy movie, and I wish that it wasn't the same title as a 1984 movie, and I wish that it didn't keep making these references to a 1984 movie. However, if that's the movie that had been made, this movie would have cost $15 million and would have made even less. So, I mean, I think it's hard to. That's a great reason to not give this movie a perfect score in my mind, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's hard to call this out as some sort of special case because that is the predominant way that summer blockbusters are made. You know,
it happens all the time, and the only reason why we're having a different conversation about this movie than we are about a lot of other movies that like 21 Jump Street, although that's not a great example because it's not like that's a revered property, but it's the closest thing I can think of.
It is to some people.
That movie was, people liked it, and it did well financially, and nobody was critical of what it was doing. There is no question that the reason the conversation about this movie is different is because it's going to be held up as a referendum on whether female stars are capable of carrying a summer blockbuster. And that sucks. I mean, it sucks to put any movie in that position.
Yeah. It sucks for...
Now,
it's,
Yeah, I mean, the fact that this movie didn't succeed ultimately, I mean, it was not a huge hit financially already on its opening weekend. People are going to try to find, people who already have an agenda against it are going to try to find illegitimate reasons to criticize it and say that it didn't succeed for, you know, a bunch of different reasons because they need for their criticism to hold up. But, you know, I think that this movie not succeeding financially, I think that it didn't have anything to do with the fact that it had four female leads, but I don't really know that, and it's impossible to know that. It certainly isn't any less enjoyable because it's four female leads.
There's the pull quote.
I mean, it's a fun movie, and it being fun, and
look,
all of the good things about it doesn't really have anything to do with the gender of the lead characters, you know, other than the fact that those four actresses happen to be really good together and have good chemistry.
No, I don't think so. I think there is something feminine about the movie, and it represents feminine friendship in a way that you don't, in ways that you don't get in male-oriented movies. I think the relationship between them four, these four actresses, them four, between
them four women,
the relationship between them is so much warmer than something you would get in 1984 between four guys, you know, where it's all
true.
About sarcasm, and it's just, you know, they work together, essentially, is the relationship there. So
there's
a lot of sincerity,
yeah.
Yeah, I think exactly. There you go. I think there's a lot of sincerity. There's uniquely feminine things about this movie, and they make them great. And I think there's an overarching subtext of not being paid attention to because they're women. I mean, they don't really ever specifically say that, but one thing I love about the movie is that it has this prevailing theme of the scientific method, you know, of having an idea and then finding concrete evidence of that idea and presenting it. And that seems to be, that's like the big challenge in the movie. And even at the end, that's the big tension is, well, all this stuff happened and we got credit for it and we're getting paid for, you know, dealing with it. But at the end of the day, we still can't actually show the things that we know are true. You know, we're not allowed to show the truth. And I feel like there is something, there's something descriptive of the female experience in America that way, you know, the idea that, you know, women can do everything that men can do, but at the end of the day, you still kind of want, you know, the system or whatever, the patriarchy, however you want to put it, wants, you know, a male, spokesperson to stand up for all these ideas that women actually built up. It's nebulous. I'll give you that in terms of that connection. But I do think that theme of the scientific method and showing what you know and living in a system where you can't show the things that you know, I think is interesting, and it's well explored in the movie. And I think there's actually a theme in this movie, and I feel like there isn't in the original Ghostbusters. The original Ghostbusters is
definitely
jokes,
I mean,
and special effects.
It's in like. It's, you know, all of the, I agree they don't really like, they don't hammer you with sort of the condescending brand of feminism where it's just like obviously playing to that. But I think if you look at that, all of the characters who are in authority positions and are cycling them are men, and you have the opening scene, even really that teaser, which I think is really fun.
Yeah,
and sets the tone really well. That little ghost story they tell you is basically about, you know, this man who locks up his scary, powerful daughter in the basement, and
yep.
everyone's terrified of her, and she breaks out. So,
yep.
You know, I think there's definitely, I think the screenplay is, that's what really struck me, I think, watching this movie is, you see so many of these movies where they've clearly tried to just get the property out there. And I don't think anybody reasonable could watch this and think that Paul Feig and Katie Dippold is her name. I had to look it up. The two screenwriters. I mean, this is a really well put together screenplay. I think it's really well thought out, and the pacing is really great. I'm a person who doesn't have a great attention span, even sometimes in blockbusters, and this movie just never felt like it was dragging to me. And I think it also left enough room to have those little fun moments, mostly by Kate McKinnon, who I think is kind of the standout here.
Absolutely.
Where she's clearly improvising and just being funny. But it did not get wallowed down in the Apatow joke-off thing that a lot of these movies sometimes do.
Absolutely. That's one thing that I'm glad you brought up, because that's one thing that blew me away, because it's something I was expecting. You know, I love Bridesmaids, but that movie's like 9 hours long, and because so much of it is, you know, Kristen Wiig riffing, and then Melissa McCarthy riffing, and that was my big fear going to this, was that, you know, it's going to be two movies, basically. It's going to be this improv comedy, and it's going to be this special effects showcase. And it's not that at all. There, I think there are one or two scenes that you can tell were just kind of, you know, a bit that kind of went on a little bit too long. But I agree with you that they were starting from a solid screenplay and from, you know, a really good structure.
Katie Dippold is a Parks and Recreation writer, by the way.
Ah, well, that explains it. And that explains also the, you know, the great voice for female characters, female comedy characters. I agree with you that Kate McKinnon is a standout, but I think that I was so pleasantly surprised the way that Feig utilized Melissa McCarthy here. I've been kind of worried about her career and the way that it had been typecast at times, and I feel like in the hands of lesser filmmakers, she's been presented as Lady Chris Farley, basically. And I think that's a really damaging...
Fairly young, that's going to leave a mark in this movie. So,
say again?
Didn't totally dispel that, but...
Say it one more time?
She yells, "That's going to leave a mark" in this movie at one point.
It then falls through a coffee table. There's a little bit of physical comedy there, but it's not because she's this big goof. It's just everybody kind of has their little moment of physical comedy, you know? And I don't know. She's the straight man in this movie, you know? She's the person with convictions that is following those convictions and, you know, is the anchor point for, you know, the more conflicted protagonist in Kristen Wiig. And I think that's great. And it's so refreshing to see a woman that looks like Melissa McCarthy presented as the most, bull person in the movie. And I know they did that with Spy, too. But I felt like with Spy, it was almost kind of candid.
I don't agree about that.
Okay.
I don't think that she was allowed to maintain her dignity, for lack of a better term, in Spy. I think that, honestly, it's been a struggle for her and for Paul Feig to figure out exactly what the right thing is for her to do next. Because I feel like she's been bouncing around from Bridesmaids, where she was this very unique character, to other movies where they want to make her just a straight-up sympathetic character who is essentially a lead, but they can't ever help themselves from making her, you know, Kevin James, basically. And this movie finally pulled it off, I think. I think they definitely let her be the lead, who it's okay that we're all confident in her and she doesn't have to look like an idiot in this movie. And they let Kristen Wiig look like the idiot. And I have to say also, by the way, they let the other two characters, who are definitely there more for comic relief, I don't think Leslie Jones is anywhere near as ridiculous as I kind of was fearing she might be from the trailers in this movie. I think she's a very, like, sympathetic, likable, and kind of, you know, they certainly give her moments where she's competent. She is not just there to be an idiot and scream.
Yeah.
And Kate McKinnon's thing, too, is even though she's super weird, again, also, she's extremely competent. She's shown to be basically like the genius of the team. And that's ultimately what it is. It's like you can have characters be funny without being idiots. And I think that's been a little bit of a struggle for, you know, people trying to find the right tone for a female-driven comedy. They don't have to be a mess and slipping and falling into things for it to just be funny.
Women, like, women be falling down in romantic
comedy.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that just, it's crazy. Here's what they did. They made each of them the character. That's all. Like, they just made each of them a fully fleshed out character.
Right.
And, yeah, Leslie Jones has moments where she's loud and screaming, but that is not her, that is not her predominant character trait, you know? And Melissa McCarthy has moments of physical comedy, but that is not her character trait. Kristen Wiig, has a really great, ongoing gag where she's totally, you know, lusting over Chris Hemsworth. But that is not her primary character trait. And just to follow on that, I think that, I don't think this is a feminist movie. I think it's a feminine movie. But I think one of the things that makes it as funny as it is that it's willing to, I don't know, I feel like that's if in a strictly feminist or kind of like politically gender aware movie, you probably wouldn't have an ongoing bit where a woman is just crumbling over, you know, a hunky dude. And I feel like that it's in a weird way gutsy to portray one of the leads that way. You know, to
a
say,
little bit, but
this lady has a weakness for you
right.
know, whatever, conventionally attractive guys.
But I think, too, it works particularly well with Chris Hemsworth because he's essentially made his public persona, right? Like, very few people are seeing this movie who don't already know who Chris Hemsworth is. And we're, like, playing with the fact that, I mean, he's basically, even in his own franchise that has made him famous, it's a gag that he's, like, absurdly good-looking. So
yes.
It's, like, playing off of his already existing public persona. I mean, he's basically Chris Hemsworth. He's dumb Chris Hemsworth in the movie.
Right, yeah.
You know? So, I mean, I think it's very, that's one of its more self-referential things that I actually really like about it a lot and think is utilizing just that particular casting. But there's, you know, I think that there were, you know, if there's one kind of issue that I have with any of the sort of characters in the movie, I actually kind of wish we got a little bit more of some of the supporting characters that I thought were introduced later in the movie than once I sort of watched it and saw how the plot played out. I get why you'd want us to spend more time with the main women, but story-wise, once you really get into what's happening, there's this villain character played by a guy named Neil Casey, who's just I've never seen him before. He's a really weird-looking dude.
Yeah.
I really liked that and what they did with him. I know he used to be involved in Saturday Night Live because I remember seeing his face on there occasionally. But I liked him. I really liked the everything they did with why am I blanking on his name?
Andy
Garcia as the mayor. I really liked him and Cecily Strong both. It's so crazy because they're introduced like two-thirds of the way through the movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they served their purposes just fine, and I didn't need to see any more of them, especially the villain. I feel like it was pretty transparent what his motivations were, and he did it. And his motivations tied into the overall theme of the movie and what the you know, he did the Christopher Nolan thing where the villain's issue is an extension of what the protagonist's issue is, you know, where he feels like he's
sure.
been ignored and marginalized his whole life.
Yes.
So I feel like that was all fine. It's just funny to me that you're like, you've got this movie with these four women and it's a big summer blockbuster and you're like, yeah, I guess I just needed more dudes.
No, I like Cecily Strong a lot too. But I do think that they kind of, it was odd to me that the plot really all comes together like at the very, very end. I mean, most of it is spent establishing the characters and putting them all together.
Yeah.
And it almost feels like, you know, this was the first movie in, you know, what they hoped would be a series of movies. And I don't know if it's going to be or not, but
yeah, it's definitely an origin story. You know,
it's
the same thing as Amazing Spider-Man or Spider-Man or Batman Begins, you know, where it's three quarters an origin story. And then while that origin story is going on, we're getting a few bits and pieces of a villain plot, and then boom, it all culminates in the big villain climax.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that sort of makes the the amount of time that was spent with it, with the different elements of the plot, make a little more sense when you say it that way. But I do think despite my sort of thinking bad about it afterwards, while I was watching it, I never felt like I need this movie to get going. Like it never felt like it dragged to me.
Yeah. I was expecting like the first half hour of this movie to be boring, to be mostly set up and mostly, like I said, that kind of at least four straight scenes of Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy doing a bit, you know, that just was going on a little long. The fact that we started with this really stinger, that there's like a funny line, I forget what the line is, but the guy from Silicon Valley, Jared from Silicon Valley, has a funny line literally like in the opening like minute of the movie, and I was like, oh, okay, so this is going to be very interesting from the get-go, and it really doesn't slow down, you know. I think I would say there's a big laugh in every scene.
I think it's where he says that the house used to have anti-Irish
yes.
fences.
Yeah, there's so many good, like, just little lines like that in there, again, that are all from the screenplay. It's kind of like Chris Hemsworth's dog named My Cat.
It's a really effective one, yeah.
It's so silly, but it works. Yep. And there was probably the laugh out loud moment, and I'm about to butcher it, and it's not going to be funny, but it's when they're looking for the curator or whatever, the museum, and Jared from Silicon Valley tells him that he's been dead for 15 years, and then Ed Begley
yeah.
Jr. walks up, and he's like, well, that's him. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's his son. I feel like that's got to be a joke that somebody put in some movie at some point, but man, I lost it. Like,
my wife
was so embarrassed at how hard I was laughing at that bit.
I really enjoyed the exchange when Kristen Wiig calls Andy Garcia the mayor from Jaws, and he gets really upset about that. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Call me the Jaws mayor.
Yeah, I felt like that was just, I don't know, that was like made for people like us. Are you pretty surprised with your reaction to the movie? Or were you
I honestly went into it like sort of expecting to be, you know, kind of, I guess I was expecting to be bored by it or just sort of underwhelmed, I guess would be the better word, because I really do think that it was poorly promoted, and you know, that's got nothing to do with Paul Feig as far as I know. But it's a tricky tone to convey probably in a trailer. And, you know, I was actually talking to Francesca, my wife, about this afterwards, and you know, we were talking about like why did Bridesmaids make so much money? And you know, I really would like to go back and watch the trailer to that movie, because it's a movie that does not have like a very clearly, obviously broad, appealing tone to it. It's a kind of weird movie, but they sold that movie to the general public and it made a tremendous amount of money. So why weren't they able to do that with Ghostbusters? And you know, where was the mistake made with this? Because I'm somebody who really loves Bridesmaids, and I love a lot of the people involved in this movie, but I had a hard time getting excited about it, and it didn't have anything to do with my feelings about Ghostbusters either. Like, I don't really care that one way or the other about that franchise.
Well, I think you nailed it there. Well, I think, first of all, Bridesmaids captures an experience that half of the country has gone through at one point or another. You know, that the experience of being part of a wedding and the tension of all that. That's something that you and I as guys don't really deal with, but I think every woman probably has. So I think it's just kind of a relatable movie, more relatable than a Ghostbusters movie. And I think that I don't think that the audience for Bridesmaids would probably automatically care that much about Ghostbusters. So I think you're not necessarily getting those people over. And then I think that the audience for Ghostbusters is probably a lot smaller than anybody intended, because honestly, until this reboot was announced, I don't think that many of us were really even talking about the original Ghostbusters that much. I think it gets lumped in with Back to the Future and Raiders of the Lost Ark as this 80s classic. And I think that while it's a perfectly entertaining movie, and you know, if somebody loves it, that I totally see why. But I don't think it's the cultural icon that, you know, a lot of these hardcore nerds that have apparently come out and been so offended at this concept that this would be rebooted. I don't think it was ever that well regarded. I don't think it made the cultural impact that
these other movies have. I mean, I hope this is a case that's more akin to Independence Day, where they just simply made a miscalculation about how much people would care about the property, and rather than that dislike weird cultural backlash that we all sense about this movie, I hope it's actually not a very big factor and that it was just loud.
Yes, I think
but
so.
I have not talked to a real person
that has felt the way that I've seen people online talk about this movie.
Yeah. I'm frankly exhausted by the conversation that led up to this movie from all that stuff. I really hope I don't ever have to talk about another movie with that kind of
BS context
ever again. I mean, I think this was a really enjoyable movie. I wish it had made more money. I hope maybe even despite that it didn't make all that much, that they decide to make another one.
Well, I think that the
story
isn't over yet.
Credits, and I'm on board. I'd love to see another one.
Yeah, and again, talking about Sincere, that whole credit sequence, I think, was really nicely done and sincere. And it's like, man, imagine making a summer blockbuster where you walk out feeling really great, you know, and just feeling like really happy. And this movie does that. The only other movie that I've seen this summer that does that is Finding Dory. And even that movie, you have to go through some pretty extreme heartache to get there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's even, we talked about Civil War. I mean, walking out of that movie, you don't feel a whole, you know, you don't feel as great as you did when you walked out of some of those other Marvel movies. So the fact that they were able to deliver that is fantastic. And I think the story isn't over yet in terms of its success. I mean, it didn't have a atrocious opening weekend. And I think the word of mouth is going to be pretty good because everybody, like I said, all the normal people I've talked to about this movie have really liked it.
Well,
and the theater was pretty packed when I was there.
It's unfortunate that you're not allowed to talk about ghosts in China. Otherwise, this might be a little bit more of a safe bet. But
yeah, maybe they'll just change that for the next movie. Let's just figure out a way to not have ghosts in the movie.
Can we just call them something else?
No, they changed the title. They changed the title. I think it's like, I think in China the official title is like worker power women fighters or something like that.
It's called Scream Women.
Something like that. It's called Totally Concrete, not, you know, corporeal women, but not that powerful. Mao, yay Mao.
Yeah.
I think it's, I don't know. I think it's pretty gutsy of Sony to go through with it, because surely they knew about that weird ban in China, but when they greenlit this movie, so it's kind of gutsy on their behalf to make it all women movie, and knowing that it's going to have a big dent in terms of global box office. But like I said, I think
are four women even allowed to stand together in the same place in China?
Oh God! Well, there goes that lucrative deal I was. I was working out with Chinese iTunes.
Yeah.
I feel like, I don't know, like, there's so much positive stuff in this movie, and it's, I'll admit that I was kind of rooting for it on the way in, just because of all the stuff that the trailer, none of the trailers were that offensive to me. I didn't understand why people picked on those trailers when we are literally inundated with dozens of horrible movie trailers every week. So I was kind of rooting for it, and I was expecting that after it was over, I was just going to have to kind of stay quiet and be like, well, that wasn't great, but, you know, I'm not going to tell everybody about it because then I'm just going to confirm all the gross weirdo trolls. But, you know, thankfully I don't have to be afraid of that because, like I said, it's one of the more fun movies this summer. And at this point, between this and Civil War and Finding Dory and The Nice Guys, I think it's been a really great summer. And I'm glad that we've had some really fun, colorful, different kinds of movies out there, even if they've all been, you know, branded franchise movies.
Yeah, it's been, I think when people do that whole it's been a bad movie summer thing, it's because of a very small number of high-profile failures. And overall, this is as good or better than any movie summer, and there's still good stuff left out there too. So I'm not buying that, but you know, I am. Again, I wish the discussion about this movie would be more pure, and I wish that when I tweeted that it was a good movie, I didn't, you know, and I'm a person who has a lot of sports fan followers. No, I mean, that's probably a little judgy of me to say it that way, but that's why they follow me. They don't follow me because of my movie opinion. I get things like the editing was awful, like freshman college level video editing. I'm sure, by the way, I'm sure that dude is really up on his Final Cut.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah.
You know, just yeah. Like,
yeah, it, he made
it's
that
weird
up.
That it's
yeah.
Weird that people feel like they have to have a strong opinion
yeah.
about
how
this
many times,
random movie.
Yeah. How many times has that guy read Walter Murch's book? I wonder. Yeah, it's a weird thing that you get when people have
the sound design was pitiful.
Yeah, exactly. Who was the gaffer on that? I would have put the light in a totally different place.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Like that's happened to me. You know, when I go into a movie, it happened to me this year with Batman Superman. That's not a movie I was excited for. I went to go see it for some stupid reason, and when I saw it, I immediately started seeing stuff that I didn't like. At the end of the day, I also saw stuff I liked, and then I added up those things and weighed them against all the things I didn't, and the bad outweighed the good. So when I talk about that movie, I can talk about it in a grander sense in 140 characters and feel like I'm correctly communicating my opinion. I don't have to, just to have a discussion of what I don't like about it, I don't have to drill down to minutia. And I feel like if we did do that, then some of our favorite movies wouldn't hold up. And yeah, it's a weird thing that all of us are susceptible to, but hopefully more of us can be self-aware enough to realize when it's happening to us and when we need to check ourselves and see when we're being real dumb with how we discuss movies. But yeah, I mean, there's just this really cool hero action moment with Kate McKinnon near the end of
yep.
the movie. And it's like, that's as cool as anything in any male-driven action movie, you know, where she just gets this badass moment to show off these cool weapons. And it's like a total action figure moment. Like, she needs, there needs to be a Holtzman action figure with all these crazy gadgets and stuff. Like, that would be awesome. And we're overlooking that because it hurts our feelings that there's some ladies in it. And it's beyond childish. It's beyond childish because there was like a row of like 8-year-old boys in front of me at this movie on Saturday, and they all loved it. They laughed and they thought it was cool, and I was like, well, there you go. There's the reason none of us should be upset, because, you know, the kids that you're acting like are able to, you know, understand that gender doesn't really matter that much. Although it did make me uncomfortable to be in a movie theater full of children and hear what I have to imagine is the first queefing joke in a major summer blockbuster.
I cannot guarantee that that's the first one at all. But
I'm sure there was one in the Transformers movie where a robot did it.
They don't swear in the movie.
No, it's a pretty clean movie. I mean, the scares are very effective, I think. But yeah, it's a pretty clean movie overall. And I guess that's not like explicit or anything. It's just like, well, there's that.
Yep.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.